Richard Armitage is here. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you doing?
Yeah, good. Welcome.
Thank you.
You are in Spooks, The Impressionists. You've been in Robin Hood, Vicar of Dibley. And you're about to appear in Chris Ryan's Strike Back, which starts tomorrow night on Sky One. And, man, that's a good show.
Thanks, man.
It's great. Yeah. I said earlier in the programme and on Twitter today that it's as brutal and exciting as 24.
Great.
Do you like that comparison?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I said ours is only six, so it's slightly shorter than 24.
That would have been exhausting. There's as many stunts and explosions and as much torture as there is in 24. It's as I started watching it, I thought to myself, don't make that 24 comparison. But by the end, I've seen the first two episodes, and it was inescapable in a way. And you've got the something of the Jack Bauer role, I think, in the part that you play in this.
Yeah, to be honest, I'm not as familiar with 24 as perhaps I should be, but
you know enough about it.
Yeah, I mean, I think when you're kind of looking at an action hero that is seriously flawed and getting themselves into really quite tricky situations because of that sort of error through their character, I think you're setting yourself up for quite an interesting roller coaster of a drama, really.
By the way, we should say that people can see you and, you know, you're worth looking at.
So stop making funny arm gestures.
Yeah, there is that. Richard's here. Go to bbc.co.uk/5live. We have these little cameras that are streaming the studio here this afternoon. We'll talk in more detail about the programme in a moment, and it's based on a book by the former SAS soldier Chris Ryan. Sky One, they're doing something interesting right now, aren't they? They're pouring millions of pounds into television shows.
Yeah, they're taking big steps forward in drama, and I think the quality of their drama programming has really leapt forward with Strike Back. I think they're making television drama, which feels much more like cinema. I think they've realised that people are watching TV in a very different way, bigger TVs, they're kind of putting the lights out, watching it like cinema. Their introduction of their HD channel, and, you know, we shot on 35mm that's been translated into HD for broadcast, and you can really see the quality of that in the image and the size of the landscape on the screen. It's just all there on the screen, you know.
They had Martina Cole's The Take on Sky One that was very good. They had those Terry Pratchett adaptations as well. In the entertainment field, they had Davina's Got to Dance, which had the sort of look and scale. I'm getting the impression you didn't see that, Richard.
No, not really.
But as a program, it was good. And they're thinking, and I know this from, I've interviewed the head of Sky One before, they want to make programs that look as big as ITV shows, and they're giving them the budget. So they're doing fewer overall programs, but they're putting lots of money into the ones that they do. And so Got to Dance had the look of an ITV entertainment show about it. And this, this is big, and it's clearly expensive.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's interesting your comparison to 24, because if this was being made in America, they would be probably trying to get 24 episodes out of it. But you know, they spent a considerable amount of money on six episodes, and I think you get six quality episodes. And actually, they're being aired as three movies back to back. So it starts tomorrow night. They show episodes one and two as a single movie. And I think the...
Are they going out together, those first two episodes?
Yeah, first two episodes. Okay. And then each consecutive Wednesday as... So it's like watching three films. And I think, you know, seeing that product, and you probably would want much more of it, but it's what you're getting, it's not about quantity, it's about quality. So, you know, it's six, you know, big budget episodes.
And obviously their thinking is that they sell it abroad, they sell it to other territories, and they look ahead, I suppose, to DVD sales as well, because I can't imagine, simply from a Sky One broadcasting, that you're getting enough advertising money to pay for these programmes.
I don't really know, to be honest, but I kind of think it has a broad appeal in terms of its market. I think it will probably translate quite well to an American market.
Yeah, you hope so.
Yeah, maybe.
Given that you've been in some very big shows, and you're about to shoot a ninth series of Spooks, is that right?
Yeah, we're halfway through series nine of Spooks. It's my third series.
It's your third series. Yeah. But given that you're in Spooks and you've been in Robin Hood and the Vicar of Dibley, when your agent calls and says, here's a project that's on Sky One,
yeah,
initially, do you think, do you recoil a bit? Do you think, oh, that's not a big enough channel? And then when it's explained that actually they're really investing in these programmes, is that what makes it more attractive?
To be honest, the phone call that came didn't start with Sky One. It started with script, character, who's producing it, and then this kind of the realisation of where it's going in terms of its broadcast became later. But I think because of the track record that you talked about, you know, the Terry Pratchett thing, movies and the Martina Cole stuff, I think, you know, Sky is very much on the map in terms of its drama, so I didn't have any hesitation at all.
Okay, now, this Andrew Lincoln's in this as well, of course. Nice twist at the end of the second episode, which I won't explain because that would be a ridiculous thing to do, but it's good. I thought the first episode was very good. It gets even more exciting, I think, in the second one. And it is quite graphic. It's quite brutal, isn't it? It's quite harsh at times.
Yeah, I sat through it with a producer friend, director as well, who said there are moments where it's extremely shocking, and then towards the end, I think the comment came that he said I was physically palpitating, and I think that really summed it up for me, is that there are some heart-stopping moments, and then there's some moments where you really do look away. I didn't realise that until I sat down and watched it as well, but it is quite brutal in places, so I think that's probably why it's going out at 9 o'clock, okay. 3 to 11.
Let's explain what it is and what happens then. We'll play a clip here which helps explain the plot. It's called Strike Back. It is about this book by the former SAS guy, Chris Ryan. It's set in Iraq, both at the start of the invasion in 2003 and in 2010 as well. Here's a clip involving your character and Andrew Lincoln, and as I say, it helps to explain the plot.
He's suspected of masterminding a whole series of attacks on British forces, not to mention financing Ba'athist Sunni groups, including the one this man belongs to. The man these people are demanding is released from Belmarsh.
John, where are you going with all this?
If Naziri is Sword of Islam, they might still be using the original safe house in Basra.
It's been 7 years, John.
Just get me to the safe house. I can infiltrate the group. Maybe even get a Scarface.
John.
Look! Just let me find him. Let me find him. And then you can send in the lads.
Now, that's quite a pivotal scene, and let's explain what's happened there then. In 2003, John Porter, your character, an SAS soldier.
Yeah, we were involved in a hostage extraction, and Porter failed to kill a 12-year-old suicide bomber who was roughly the same age as his daughter. And that suicide bomber suspectedly killed two of his colleagues and put a third colleague in a coma. 7 years later, John is back trying to regain his position, because that decision caused him to lose his job. So he comes back to, he sees that Scarface is the suicide bomber, and he sees him 7 years later and he recognises him as part of a hostage take.
He's on the news, basically.
Yeah,
isn't he?
He's on the news. And he goes in and tries to get Collinson, played by Andrew Lincoln, to allow him to infiltrate this group of people that have kidnapped a Sky journalist. And obviously, because he's been decommissioned, he won't do it. But Collinson has a different agenda because he knows what really happened with that suicide bomber and the death of his team. So, and that's a story which is going to run through all six episodes.
Okay, and he gets to use the nice phrase, he gets reactivated.
Reactivated.
He's essentially been a security guard, hasn't he, for a few years?
Yeah, he's been down on his luck.
Gets reactivated as an SAS soldier and goes back to Iraq to try and rescue this journalist who's been kidnapped by Scarface, this suicide bomber that he met all those years ago. And this is where he gets a big Jack Bauer-like. He essentially goes it alone.
He goes in as a one-man mission, but he's sort of winging it on his own. He's called Bravo Team, which is sort of off the radar, really. No one ever thinks they're going to have to send him in because they think they've got a lead and they send in a proper team and they think they've sorted it all out and it's a booby trap. And so he's the last man standing, and it's like, okay, he doesn't get permission. He just gets in a Land Rover, drives off to find this safe house, and he's on his own.
And he gets in there. At one point, he has a tooth extracted. Someone gets a hand chopped off. So there's a lot of laughs. A lot of laughs in there.
Yeah.
Let's take some travel. We'll come back and talk some more. Richard Armitage is here. Any questions? 85058, bacon at bbc.co.uk. You can ask him about Spooks or Robin Hood or the Vicar of Dibley, whatever you fancy. It's 16 minutes past two. Louise Perry.
Thanks, Richard. The M3, one lane's closed southbound junctions 4A to 5. That's Farnborough and Hook because of a broken down lorry. The M4, we've got one lane closed eastbound 25 and 24. That's Carlion Road and Caldwell. That's also due to a broken down vehicle. The A1 has a lane out southbound at Morpeth. That's between the A697 and the A192, where a lorry's gone into the central reservation. We also had a call from Lenny reporting a broken down vehicle southbound near Ferry Bridge. blocking one lane, so I'm just trying to get some more details on that one. The A120 still closed both ways at Coggeshall at the B1024. That's after a serious accident. The A414 is also still closed in Ongar between the 41 roundabout and the B181 after an accident. And the A11 Whitechapel High Street, that remains closed both ways between Galston Street and Commercial Street. This is all following the early incident at Aldgate East Tube Station. Louise Perry, 5 Live Travel.
Football on 5 Live and 5 Live Sports Extra.
And it is another Premier League surprise.
The Championship. The FA Cup. European football. Scottish Premier League. South Africa 2010. And live Premier League football.
Here's a chance. It's in the net.
Wednesday night. Kick-off. 8 p.m. It's Manchester City against Tottenham.
Beats them at the near post.
Football on 5 Live and 5 Live Sports Extra. For full programme listings, click bbc.co.uk/5live.
Game over! Time is up!
It's 17 minutes past 2. Timothy Spall on after 2:30 with his wife Shane. They've been going around the UK in their boat and they'll talk to us about why they love that. Have you seen a celebrity indulging their hobby? It's the texter today. At any point, 85058, bacon@bbc.co.uk, or a celebrity enjoying what appears to be their hobby. Afternoon, Richard. I've flown radio-controlled aeroplanes with Vernon Kay up at Wormwood Scrubs. He's into it in a big way, says Max in Bracknell. Thank you, Max. I simply didn't know that. Frank in Redditch. I've seen David Jason flying his helicopter. Really, Frank? Are you making things up now? I know that the DJ Dr. Fox has a helicopter. I did not know that David Jason had a helicopter. I saw England rugger legend Tim Rodber at Le Mans just after final qualifying, says Nick. And Richard, we saw Sting and Trudy Styler bird watching on Lundy Island. They didn't appear very rock and roll, says Zad. I suppose they would in that context. Lisa and Nick Cook. 85058. If you'd like to talk to us today, Richard Armitage is still here. We're talking about his role as John Porter in Chris Ryan's Strike Back, which starts tomorrow night on Sky One. There are 6 episodes shown in pairs, as you said a moment ago, so they look like films. I keep making this 24 comparison.
Yeah.
24 is always a little bit nebulous and vague about who the bad guys really are. You know, they're kind of Middle Eastern most of the time, but they never have the sort of courage to say where they are, or they just invent a country.
Yeah.
Whereas this is, I suppose, more relevant, more topical in some ways. It's about Iraq. It's about the invasion of Iraq.
Yeah, I mean, that's our first episode, our second episode, second story, should I say. We go into Zimbabwe and there's a potential assassination of Robert Mugabe. The third story is set in Afghanistan. We've got a British operative who's kind of gone AWOL and he's redirecting US missiles. You know, he's working with the Taliban in cyberspace. So, yeah, they're as relevant as they can be without pressing too many buttons. If essentially they are just a fictional backdrop, but you know, we hope to sort of prick the conscience of people watching it so it feels that they can connect into it and they're recognizing something from, you know, current affairs.
I mean, the premise is quite Boyzone, a lot of it, isn't it? It's quite
Boyzone.
But as in not Boyzone, no, they've got no part in Chris Ryan's Strike Back in foiling an attempted assassination of Mugabe. It's a male show, isn't it? It's going to attract a predominantly male audience.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose when I embarked on it, I thought that was possibly the case. But I think when you look at the man as opposed to what he does as his job, it becomes a bit more wide-reaching. And I think this is about a man who made a decision that had such a catastrophic effect on his life, and he still believes that was the right decision, even against the odds, against the evidence of what's happened. And I think that begins to become more about a man than a soldier. The soldier is just what he does. And getting him into these situations, it becomes much more of a moral journey for him. How does he survive as a man and a soldier, as a husband and a father and a soldier at the same time? So hopefully it kind of sort of broadens the scope of it.
I mean, you've got, given that Chris Ryan wrote this, and I was reading yesterday that Chris Ryan has written 14 novels.
Yeah.
14.
14 bestsellers as well.
And he's written 3 non-fictions as well, hasn't he?
Yeah.
The one that was Left Behind, Bravo to Zero, and obviously the third one, isn't there? But this is fictional, but obviously based on a reality that he understands.
Yes. And it's actually the part of the book that I really went for when I was looking at it, because I felt that probably John Porter was going to be somebody that was as close to him as you could find in any fiction.
As close to Chris Ryan.
It must be. I mean, I've got no evidence that was the case.
But you met Chris, came down to set, did he? You met him?
I didn't actually meet him. He advised early on during the pre-production.
He didn't come down.
I didn't actually get to meet him. We were way off in South Africa by the time we got into production. But
I wondered if he's always in silhouette.
In a sort of profile. He'd met all the SAS guys that we were working with. But I felt that Porter in the novel was probably the closest we'd get to the truth in terms of him and his... And if you look at the detail that he writes that character compared to the other characters, clearly that John in the book was you know, a lot of his own experience.
So it's the one that got away, not the one that got left behind. I've just realised the one that got away, the title of his book, wrong. But he, yes, such a remarkably successful author, isn't he?
Yeah.
And the fact that there are 14 of them really did take me by surprise. But this works. It works because, as we say, because of its relevance, because it's fairly topical. So it takes in Iraq, Zimbabwe, Afghanistan and Pakistan over the six episodes. Yeah. Did you film a lot of it in South Africa, is that right?
Yeah, we filmed all of it in South Africa. And South Africa actually becomes... London, it becomes Hereford, it becomes the mountains of Afghanistan. We did go up to Namibia to shoot Afghanistan, which was amazing. And it's interesting because you do question, why are we here? Why are we shooting this here? And then when you see the end product and you see the big helicopter shot where the landscape expands in front of you, you really understand because, to me, there were some places we shot that to me looked like CGI to the naked eye. Yeah. And on screen, you kind of think, are people going to really believe that this is true, or are they going to think it's computer generated? But there's very little CGI in this.
On that point about a certain type of truth, and I mentioned it's based on a reality that Chris Ryan understands, having been in the SAS. Watching it, and I was looking at the kidnap scenarios and the safe houses, and I suppose there must be, you know, the show has studied that and it's tried to recreate. How those sorts of missions would really work when they went to extract a hostage. That's where one part of the programme. The other part of the programme is based at MI6, isn't it?
Yeah.
Where Andrew Lincoln is conducting operations. And I assume that isn't particularly realistic. He stands in front of a great big screen and he's got lots of video feeds, and that's where it really does look a bit 24.
Yeah, it's kind of how we hope MI6 is, but the reality is probably not quite as glamorous as that.
I imagine the reality is it's just lots of people sitting at computers studying data.
Yeah, and on headphones like this, whispering into real machines, yeah.
It's just quite a boring job, I would imagine, in reality. So you've got that, you've in a way, with the MI6 stuff, you've fed the public the way that they think these things work. But the stuff on the ground has, I think anyway, as far as I know, what do I know, but has an air of realism about it.
I think the reason for that is because of the lack of CGI, because everything we did, we had to really do. And I did every stunt apart from one thing, which I'm not going to tell you what it is. Hopefully you won't be able to spot it, but it was just one thing that we couldn't get the insurance for. And I think that plays a lot into this, that because there isn't a lot of computer-generated image, because most of it's real, it really is going to feel real. So, you know, when we're kind of doing the explosions and driving off in the Land Rovers, and it's all for real.
Let's have a look. This email says, "Hello, can you please let Richard Armitage know that his Armitage Army..." Yeah, hardcore fans out there are really looking forward to watching Strike Back tomorrow night on Sky One, and are all totally behind him, supporting him in everything he does. I'd like to know which character he's enjoyed portraying the most. That's essentially, it goes on a bit, but that's essentially the question.
Ah, gosh, I have to say, John Porter's probably the character that I think, probably because it's the closest to me. But I actually started dreaming John Porter's dreams, which was really quite disturbing. So, he got under my skin quite a lot. But obviously, John Thornton from North and South was quite a monumental.
And you played Monet, didn't you?
I did.
In The Impressionists.
In a big wig.
Prefer John Porter to Monet.
Yeah, I mean, I get to run around with guns rather than pointing at paintings.
Just been asking people as well on the text to tell us about celebrities that they've seen indulging their hobbies ahead of Timothy Spall's appearance on the programme shortly. Dear Richard, I saw Wincy Willis last week wakeboarding in Ipswich. Justine, a lot of people, they've started simply making things up and sending them in. Richard, you're right to look puzzled by that.
She used to be a weather girl many years ago and used to wear quite loud jumpers, from what I remember, although it was the 80s.
Yeah. I've seen Prunella Scales and Timothy West on a canal, on a canal boating holiday in the West Midlands, says Ruth. I believe that
one. Oh, yeah, that counts, yeah.
There's some honesty there. Thank you. David Suchet, canal boating in Stourbridge in the West Midlands. It would appear that canal boating is all the rage with British actors of a certain age, doesn't it? In a few years, you need to take this up, Richard.
No.
Does it not appeal to you at all? Why not?
Danger sport, all the way.
Which danger sport do you do?
I'm a bit of a skier, actually, but I'm kind of looking forward to bit of off-piste next
year. You better make sure you never end up in a soap opera, because you know if you're in a soap opera you're not allowed to go skiing.
I know.
It's in the contract.
Or horse riding.
Is that in there as well?
Yeah.
I didn't realise this until I got to know a few people in who've been in soaps, in particular EastEnders and Corrie, but their contracts are really, really strict. So don't join EastEnders or Corrie, Richard. Okay. That's my simple message to you. I think canal boating does appeal. I can get it.
Yeah, I think it'd be great.
Yeah.
I think it's the chance to get away and just do your own thing and stop at pubs along the way and just chill out. I think, yeah.
I think when we've heard Timothy Spall and his wife Shane,
we'll be one even more.
Exactly. Mm. This particular role that you've taken on for Sky One, it's pretty tough physically. You'd obviously been working out for this part.
Yeah, I didn't have a great deal of time to prepare, but I worked with a trainer in the UK who was ex-military and the trainer in South Africa, and then we had the three SAS guys giving us weapons and tactics.
What were they like?
They were probably not what you'd expect. One of them was like your
favourite... Small and weedy?
One of them was like your favourite granddad.
Quite camp. I'm not expecting that.
just kind of, very low-key.
Are they?
Very, very low-key. But I don't want to talk about it too much.
How long ago did they stop being in the SAS?
Well, it feels like they never did, but a good 10, 15 years, but the stories they have to tell are pretty amazing.
Are they?
Yeah.
Could this thing, your character's been reactivated, as I mentioned earlier. I quite like that phrase. It makes you sound like a robot.
Yeah.
Which is not a terrible analogy. I mean, you're pretty...
plug him in.
Plug him in, yeah.
Push him off.
Fairly ruthless machine. Yeah. But can that actually happen? Did they say this could happen? Can you get pulled back in, or is that a bit of Chris Ryan fantasy?
To be honest, I didn't want to hear, no, that would never happen, so I didn't ever ask
didn't
the
ask.
Question. But, you know, we did avoid the sort of slightly cheesy montage sequence, which was possibly there, where he kind of goes through his Rocky Balboa retraining kind of thing. So we tried to make it as believable as possible. So taking him to... Because I think in the book he hits the bottle quite badly and he becomes a tramp and, you know, he rehabilitates within 24 hours and is back on ops. And I felt that was probably a bit too much to ask. So we kept him kind of ready to operate at any moment. So
there are those scenes, even when he's working as a security guard, you see him working out still, don't you?
So reactivating him wasn't such a big leap.
But I imagine that he's quite difficult to find. Once you've been in the SAS, what do you do then? You know, finding a role after that. Did they talk about that? That must be difficult.
Yeah, they then go and work on films and give people weapons to fire off. I think you're right. I think that there's some kind of adrenaline rush that you can't achieve in any other field, and
not even television. Just talk about a couple of the shows that you've been in. Vicar of Dibley, and you married Dawn French's character.
Boy, that was an adrenaline rush.
Maybe that one does equal that the experience of being in the SAS, extracting a hostage from a safe house. You know, a nice point to join the show. Those last couple of episodes got enormous audience, didn't they?
Yeah, and also it was a big antidote for me. I think I spent a lot of time on television looking serious and scowling a lot. So to go into that show and get to snog Dawn French and, you know, have a generally good laugh was brilliant. And I actually still live with the hope that the phone might ring and they'll say, look, we're going to do another Christmas special, because... You never know. They didn't burn the set anyway.
No. These successful sitcoms always come back for more Christmas specials. Like an SES soldier who needs another gear, you know,
reactivate.
Needs to give
it
reactivate. They'll reactivate.
Plug her in.
Yeah. Spooks. You mentioned Spooks. You're into the ninth series now. Interestingly, everyone said that was the British 24, and actually, it's not really, is it? It's very distinct from it, and hugely successful for what it is.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that it's in its ninth series, one questions how does that happen, but I think because they reinvigorate the show by the way they dispatch with their regular characters, the way that they introduce new writers. You know, the political landscape is always giving material to play with. I think this year we're up against China and Russia working together, and the new regime in America. So it's very interesting.
The new regime in America. Regime. Well, is there a reference to Obama?
Yeah, I think I have. It's not actually in print at the moment. One of the episodes is going to involve a visit from Obama, which becomes an assassination attempt. So,
but presumably you never see him. It's a bit weird.
I don't think so. I think you probably might see him below the neck because he is quite tall. So
you work on shows that are fun, don't you?
Yeah, brilliant fun.
It's just great. The again, the spooks are using real politicians. It was always amusing, both in 24 and the West Wing, when they would invent countries and then invent presidents of real countries. And
yeah, we've got Kazakhstan this year, which I love saying.
Are you?
Yeah, Kazakhstan. Like, there's a syllable missing, isn't there?
There is. Yeah. I didn't know you mentioned so many countries in that programme as well. But there you go, nine series. You're filming it at the moment.
Yeah.
But Pete, I would urge anyone to watch John Porter, your character, in Chris Ryan's Strike Back, which starts tomorrow night on Sky One, because it is marvellous. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
There's Richard Armitage.